Good morning, everybody. We are in Allersheim in Switzerland on Wednesday, May 17th. And I would like to mention, it was exactly to the day, 101 years ago, on the 17th of May, that there was a report about a very ugly riot in Munich that happened on the 15th of May, a couple of days earlier, during a lecture of Rudolf Steiner in Munich, which turned out to be the last one, by pre-Nazi vandals and, you know, primitive people who managed to find the place where the whole electricity of a large hall could be cut off or put in. It was an eerie thing because suddenly, during the lecture, the light went out. And only because some good pupils, who was an electrician of Steiner's, installed a little light in front of the lectern. So with this little light and the lamp there, Steiner spoke on as if nothing had happened. And at the end of the lecture, some people stormed the podium and wanted to, you know, have, I don't know what, but it was well defended by his own students. But he said after this happening, if these people come to the power, my foot is not entering Germany anymore. And this is the case. That is 100 years ago. Why I want to mention it for our American English-speaking friends is there was today on the 17th of May 1922, 101 years ago, a report in the New York Times, riot at Munich. So they found it important enough to report. Bad omen. And this is now for an introduction to our subject of Ahriman and Michael, or Michael and Ahriman, because the Nazi movement is, of course, the anti-Michaelic movement in the 20th century. It's directly opposed to anything that has to do with spiritual science in the sense of anthroposophy of Steiner. Now we're going to try to clarify a little bit what these beings actually are. Now first, we have to do with cosmic beings. Ahriman, Michael, the Christ, Lucifer, Sorat, all cosmic beings. Ahriman is, some of you hearers know that very well, is hinted at and called by Catherine Austin Fitts, who stimulated these talks, I have to mention here, gratefully, Mr. Global. That's her term, and I think it's a very good term for the Ahrimanic being. Now, three of the beings I already mentioned, Ahriman, Lucifer, Christ, have one thing in common. They don't incarnate in the course of their development except one, once and only once. And you find in important lectures we edited here in Germany, you find the statement that there was, that could even be put that there was an incarnation of Lucifer in the third millennium BC. Then we have the incarnation of the Christ in Jesus of Nazareth in Palestine. And here, before only a part of the third millennium will have been elapsed, thus Steiner in 1919, we will have an incarnation in flesh of Ahriman in the West. China, Palestine, the West. And it's very clear, I hope it will get even clearer through this little talk, that this incarnation in the West of Ahriman is now. We are in this time. We don't have to wait. Why? Steiner gave in 1919, so to speak, a kind of a help for our time to understand it deeper by saying there are about 8 or 9 symptoms of events in history that are preparing this present incarnation. They are the following: a mechanical worldview without soul and spiritual aspects, a purely materialistic cosmology, which reflects in so-called, flights to the moon, flights to the Mars planned, etc., etc. Then we have the influence of the view that the most important thing is to be physically nurtured, have food. It's certainly important, but it is over-important by many people today, except all those who don't even have food at all. Then we have the principle of nationalism, of self-determining of even little nations, put out by the American President Wilson, as you know. Then we have a one-sided interpretation of the Gospels, especially in Western so-called Christian movements. Take the Bible literally. That's maybe a noble ideal, but on the other hand, almost impossible to fulfill, because some of the things have to be understood from a spiritual point of view, because otherwise you can't really properly translate them. Then we have the tendency of having wisdom, knowledge stored up in tons of food. This means the tendency to have all wisdom in libraries, in university libraries, for example, to store it all up. And today we have it on the internet. You can download all the works of Steiner, for example, in the internet. There is pro, there is contra to it. I'm not going into that right now. Then you have the tendency of statistics and the belief in the truth of statistics. And this has nothing to do with the individual. But statistically, you could say, what do 23.4 Japanese believe? But what is 0.4? There is not a real number of a real existing individual. Then you have, and this is very actual today, I say something maybe a bit controversial by saying this. There is a kind of a free ticket to clairvoyance. Free ticket. And there is a tendency for clairvoyance, which you even see in use books like Harry Potter, can look from very different angles. One is young people who haven't really done much in life yet are getting chosen for special magical skills, etc. One can look at that also from the point of view that all these named things are preparing the incarnation of Ahriman, according to a number of lectures in 1919 by Rudolf Steiner. You will see some picture of the book afterwards, because I think it's very important that we have a knowledge of these lectures 100 years ago, because all the things here described as symptoms for the preparation of the incarnation of Ahriman have actually been produced. We don't have to wait for it. It's there. So the preparation is finished. So that is very important, that we have a clear consciousness of that we are speaking, when we're speaking about Ahriman, about a cosmic being like Lucifer, like the Christ who incarnates once, namely in our epoch. Mr. Global is there now. Now let's have a little look at world history, because even before incarnation, these three beings, Ahriman, Michael, Lucifer, Christ. Michael never incarnates, but the three others, Ahriman, Lucifer, Christ, they are active even before or after their earthly incarnation. The Ahrimanic beings, or the Ahrimanic being, they are being and follower beings of such a being. They were active in the Atlantean time with Lucifer, in the Roman time with Lucifer, in the time of the Templar tragedy, which I think some of you will know. The Templar, Knight Templars, were imprisoned, tortured in a terrible way in the beginning of the 14th century, and that was an Ahrimanic super attack before any Ahriman was incarnating. Now, this is also linked to the enigmatic apocalyptical number 666. The working of this being has to do with this number. I'm not going into it now, but I want to take out some aspect which was very important with the Templars. The Templars were fantastic dealers, dealing in a fantastic way with the money question. They had the principle, no one member of the order as such has wealth, has money. All the wealth belonged to the order. Similar like in the early Christian order of the Essenes, for those of you who know them, there was only common wealth. That freed the wealth there from, well, egotism, which is usually linked to the money question. As long as the money is only in the individual possession. So the wealth management of the Templars was fantastic. They were so rich, they had also properties all over Europe, that they lent money to kings and statesmen in a great, great extent. That roused the jealousy of the then French king, Philip le Bel. And he had the wish of becoming the owner of this huge wealth of the Templars. And he wanted to become a member, but he was not allowed to go into the order. That increased his lust for the wealth, even that he didn't go get into the order. And so he organized a wave of arrest throughout France in one sinister night. It was the 13th October 1307. An arrestation of Templars throughout France, as it was never there before. Well organized. A police, so to speak, organized wave of arrestations. And then they were, in a cruel way, tortured. And under the pain of the tortures, they were made to say things which are not true. That was later on again practiced. For example, not too many years back, you remember, we had prisoners in Guantanamo who were tortured in such a way that they said the things one wanted to hear, that they were in the crimes, that they were helping to prepare, say, the 9/11 atrocity, etc. So that was exemplarically practiced at the Templar time. Now, we go back a little bit. Even already at the time of the Christ, Ahriman was active. If you read the Bible, you remember there are quite soon after the baptism in Jordan, three temptations that the Christ, who is a cosmic being, incarnating in a human being, Jesus of Nazareth, the Christ was soon after the baptism led into the desert to meet three temptations. And the third temptation, the first was by Lucifer, the second was by Lucifer and Ahriman combined. And then after the second, Ahriman was not pleased, so to speak, with the result. And he said, "Lucifer, leave me alone," for the third temptation. And what was the first, third temptation? He tempted the Christ, "Make from stones bread." He raised the bread question. And this temptation was leaving an unsolved rest through history. The Christ just said, "Man does not live off bread alone." That's a negative answer. It's true. But it shows that this being was not yet so familiar with the deepest earth material realities that many people have to live in. This was a certain rest. This question had to be solved in the future with help of us human beings, like the Templars, who had a selfless approach to the money question. The first two temptations were more for vanity and for things that the Christ easily could handle. Now, the third temptation worked into the whole story of the treason of the Christ, leading up to Golgotha and the crucifixion. And you know all who was the character who committed the treason? Judas. And what played a part in this treason of the Christ, of his master? The money. He sold the Christ in the act of treason. This is a connection to the third temptation, the Christ. Ahriman works in that sphere. And I think it's very important to know today, about 15 or 20 years ago, one published in the United States first, a gospel of Judas. It was an apocryph, hidden gospel, I think in Ethiopian version first, translated from the Greek. And it's only fragmentary, but some of the fragments are outstanding, namely what is said about the relation between Judas and the Christ as a disciple. And one sentence is, I remember, the Christ said to Judas at some point, "It is your destiny that your star, leads you to dark acts, your star." That means your destiny is to commit this treason. It's your star. It is not just a weakness of your lower nature. Somebody had to do this. And Steiner spends quite a time in one of the lectures I want to briefly mention. It's called The Fifth Gospel, which is only in the Akashic Record. And in the Fifth Gospel, he speaks about the connection of Judas, treason, and the money impulse of Ahriman. So we have the Ahrimanic being working in the economy sphere, in the money question, right up today. And you can see many people today are so much inspired by this being that all their thinking is circling around money, even more money, at the expense of the welfare of the rest of humanity. They don't care. I don't think I have to explain much. You all know also the very illuminating articles in on Solari about this subject and how to get out of this unhealthy way of dealing with money as a mere means of power. This should be ended. Now, I want to change a little bit to the subject in connection with Michael. Michael is also a time spirit. Since 1879, he is the new time spirit. And you can characterize Michael by asking, what is his difference? What is the difference between Michael as a time spirit and the other six time spirits that exist? There are seven altogether. Gabriel is one of them. Orifiel is one of them at the time of the Christ. Zachariel, etc. You can find that in the literature of spiritual science. Seven. But Michael has a property that no other time spirit has. First, he inspires cosmopolitan mentality, cosmopolitan, since 1879. Gabriel was more inspiring a kind of a national building, enclosed sphere, etc. And not only does Michael belong to the impulse of cosmopolitanism, which is the modern true time spirit influence, if you like, but he is a being that works waiting, whereas the other time spirits works in a way that if you live in that time of another time spirit, you are under the influence. There are also good spiritual influence in the past. But Michael is looking and waiting. He is waiting for the human being to act. He doesn't influence anyone like the other time spirits did. So this has obviously to do with his appreciation of human freedom. If you want to appreciate human freedom, you cannot just do something with the people who are bound to become free beings. Whereas Ahriman, who is also working today, behind the scenes or even in an incarnated form, he has no respect of freedom in whatever way. He just wants to be effective. Whether you know how or not, he doesn't care. He doesn't give a... I don't want to use that four-letter words, but you know what I mean. So we have this polarity of these two beings. And it goes on even in further aspects, namely, Ahriman is the being who works with coercion, who works with the human being's inclination to find words all important. You are all aware how much word politics today is there. For example, look into the press, in the daily press, and almost everywhere on the whole world, you will regularly find the phrase coined, the Russian aggression war. Aggression war. Meaning that the Russians are the aggressors in a war where the victims are the innocent Ukrainians. I'm not want to make a political comment, but hint out that aggression war is the formula universally used for a big, tragic, sad event. That means you want to make people thinking going into one direction and only one direction. And everyone who is not believing through the use of these coined phrases, who is the aggressor? This. And he has to be blamed. And if you are questioning this, in German, there is a very funny word creation. You call someone who is not totally convinced that there is only one aggressor here, is called a Putin-Versteher, a Putin-Understander, so to speak. But what about the aggressions that were put forward into action through decades by the US, by the NATO? They are not there. So that shows this manipulation tendency with using certain words with the intention that this usage of the words forms the consciousness and the thinking of millions of people. It's an Arimanic tendency and art, and he's a master of this art. So Ahriman works with our inclination to put all importance in how we call something or think of the usage of the word racism, extremist, or even more maybe obvious, if you have the wrong view about something political, then you're called, you know what, conspiracy theorists. The word conspiracy is such a poisonous weapon word. It has nothing to do with knowing facts. And people are influenced because they are afraid that they are called conspiracy theorists. Maybe some people will come, and if they hear about a talk like that, they say, well, this is just very clear. These anthroposophists, like Steiner and his little pupil Meyer and others, they just have conspiracies about beings that is unreal. So get away from it. So these words should be really something we have to get away from in order to have a free thinking consciousness. And this is actually the opposite tendency of Michael. You find some statements, I don't know exactly where, in Steiner. Michael hopes, in his waiting gesture, looking at humanity, that people don't place the most importance on words, on formulations, but that they go into the thinking realm, in which words are only the expression, but they can change. You can say to some think that you think, some thought, give many names, as is factually the case in all the world languages. So free our thinking from clinging to words is an impulse of Michael and a hope of Michael. And if you don't free that, you cannot become Michaelic, and you stay much more likely to be under the verbal influence that is created by Ahriman. And you find a very prophetic thing also in Steiner, I think in the lecture of 1916, where he says, the time is not far where there will be a law against thinking in the world. It will not be directly called like that. But if you make people getting used to the right formulation and the wrong formulation indirectly, that is creating a situation where free thought is prohibited. And you can see that in the corona time, for example, how much this tendency is there not to think. Thinking is an individual activity which is sometimes a bit hard, strenuous. I quote an American, I have quoted him already, for our American readers. I love the quote, very simple. Ralph Waldo Emerson once said in one of his essays, he raised an interesting question. What is the hardest work in the world? And he gave the short answer, to think. Harder than chopping wood, harder than earning a fortune or whatever. He thought to think, because it requires our whole being's effort. And of course, not everyone is maybe ready for that. So it's simpler to have ready-made formulas to understand the world. But we don't understand them by formulas. So this is some of the basic polarity of these two beings and how they work in the human realm. Now, freedom, Michael, he is also in his whole history very deeply connected with the Christ being. Whereas Ahriman is on an opposite side. It's even said in one important lecture by Steiner about 100 years ago that Ahriman, who was present spiritually at the time of the mystery of Golgotha, that when the resurrection happened, Ahriman was surprised. That is something not in his calculation, going beyond his marvelous intellect. We will talk about that in the end now. His marvelous intelligence couldn't foresee an event that went against all so-called natural laws. You can have a wonderful illustration of this against natural laws in a great painting here near Basel in Colmar, namely the altarpiece of Grünewald, where you see the risen Christ and you see heavy rocks lifted up into the air, falling down and so on. So, and Steiner says, points out, when this happened, not the crucifixion, that was not an understanding problem for Ahriman. On the contrary, he must have thought, well done, Jews in Palestine, well done. We got rid of this useless idealist. And but he was surprised about the resurrection. And here, spiritual science reveals a wonderful fact about Judas, who was led to treason of the Christ and who hung himself afterwards, because that's not what he wanted, not what he hoped. What was Judas' great error? It was that the Christ, and he knew the power of the Christ, he knew it, but he couldn't understand that this Christ is never showing it. So he hoped to provoke a real power gesture by the treason. And of course the Christ could have done that, but he didn't. There are deep reasons why not. And after the resurrection, and Judas was already, has murdered himself, he was so touched and drawn into the sphere of the risen Christ that he had not even time and space in his soul for, you know, regret. He was, and now I think we can say, he now saw the true power that was there, but was there not to impose itself on people by this or that magical act and so on, but was there to be freely grasped by human souls. So he was out of his error he had before. That's an interesting process. And we will talk tomorrow about reincarnation. And just a hint at one point. Judas reincarnated after this great experience before his death by the treason, after his death by witnessing the resurrection. He reincarnated first as Saint Augustine, great church father, who in a certain point in his life was have a spiritual awakening, totally changed. That was when his deeper nature awoke, so to speak. And then he reincarnated again. And this is not so known, but I want to mention it and come back maybe tomorrow. As none other than the painter of the world, known painting of the Last Supper. We have an illustration here on the wall. The Last Supper is the moment in which the Christ says to the disciples, this is the moment, one of you will commit a treason. And all the disciples are absolutely stunned and amazed. Even Judas, who is in the foreground, the one with the blue shirt, he does not know that he is the one. This is a great painting by the same individuality in the next incarnation, showing the superiority of the Christ, who could have, of course, first not chosen him as a disciple, and then prevented him from doing the treason. But Christ, as the spirit of freedom, knows Judas, knows that someone has to do that out of other reasons we cannot go into. And then he puts the bread into the little vessel in front of Judas and says, the one to whom I will bring the bread into the vessel is it. And then it starts dawning on Judas, and the Christ says, now go and do what you have to do quickly. The night comes in, and the gospel, I think the John gospel, says clearly, now the Satan power was entering him. So he was under the inspiration of Ahriman when he went out for his treason. The same Ahriman that was behind the money that he got for the selling. So these are great things, of course, and they have to be carefully studied, put together. I just wanted to go from the Ahriman spirit, its relation to the money question, to the Judas question, and show that in this evolution through life's incarnation, there is a tremendous development. So it's no accident who painted this painting, about which Steiner once said, if someone from the Mars would look down to Earth, this is the painting that would give him some UQ. What is all about in the Earth? This is the deepest message. Freedom, sacrifice, power beyond earthly power, which could, of course, have prevented all this. So we need a deep breath for looking into these things. Now, for our last part, I would like to point to one of the last scriptures that exist by Steiner. There are essays. He was on sickbed already in autumn 1924, and there he wrote short, concise extract of what he thought Anthroposophy was about, very concentrated. And one of the essays here is called The World Thoughts in the Working of Michael and in the Working of Ahriman. And I will just pick out a few quotes. In the past, Michael unfolded the intellectuality throughout the cosmos. He did this as the servant of the divine spiritual powers, to whom both he himself and man owed their origin. And he wishes not to depart from this relationship to intellectuality. It is altogether different with Ahriman. He is a being who long, long ago severed himself from the stream of evolution to which those divine spiritual powers belong, of whom we are speaking. In an age of primal antiquity, he set himself up beside them as an independent power in the cosmos. So we see both Michael and Ahriman have a close, very different relationship to the intellect that is also living in us. And that is now the point of view for the following. Now, Ahriman appropriated intellectuality to himself in an age when he could not make it an inner reality within him. It has remained in his being as a force, utterly detached from anything of heart or soul. Intellectuality pours forth from Ahriman as a cold and freezing, soulless cosmic impulse. Those human beings who are taken hold of by this impulse bring forth that logic which seems to speak for itself alone, void of compassion and of love, which bears no evidence of a right, heartfelt, inner relationship of soul between the human being and what he thinks and speaks and does. In real truth, it is Ahriman who speaks in this kind of logic. And it's evident that today we have many people who can be characterized by that. Many, many. Heartless logic, cold. And then he goes on, but Michael has never appropriated intellectuality to himself. He rules it as a divine spiritual force while feeling himself united with the divine spiritual powers. And when he pervades the intellect, it becomes manifest that the intellect can equally well be an expression of the heart and soul as an expression of the head and mind. For Michael has within him all the original forces of his gods as well as those of man. Consequently, he does not convey to the intellect anything that is soulless, cold, frosty, but he stands by it in a manner that is full of soul and inwardly warm. And the third part of what I want to bring forth for you exercise of understanding it deeper is the following. Now Steiner makes a kind of a picture called in spiritual science imagination, not an intellect definition of these two world beings of these two. Ahriman and Michael. One of the imaginations of Michael is quite short, is the following. He rules through the passage of time, bearing the light from the cosmos really as his own being, giving form to the warmth of from the cosmos as the revealer of his own being. As a being, he keeps steadily on his course, like a world affirming himself only by affirming the world, as if leading forces down to the earth from all parts of the universe. Contrast this with an imagination of Ahriman. As he goes along the world, he would like to capture space from time. He has darkness around him, into which he shoots the rays of his own light. The more he achieves his aims, the severer is the frost around him. He moves as a world which contracts entirely into one being, namely his own, in which he affirms himself only by denying the world. He moves as if he carried with him the sinister forces of dark caves in the earth. I think these two contrasting images, imaginations called, can help more to precisely find the relation between these two beings who both have to do with the intellect, warm, human, and cold, inhuman. But the intellect is common to them in a very different way. Let me close with the last thing which was given on the illness sickbed of Steiner's at the end of his lifetime of building up spiritual science. When man seeks freedom without inclining towards egoism, when freedom becomes for him pure love for the action which is to be performed, then it is possible for him to approach Michael. But if he desires to act freely and at the same time develops egoism, if freedom becomes for him the proud feeling of manifesting himself in the action, then he is in danger of falling into Ahriman's sphere. This is one of the most telling and characteristic things I find in spiritual science. That's why I wanted to put it at the end of this, maybe a little bit extended talk. But at the very end of the end, I would like to quote a verse, like a verse meditation, short. And I checked the internet and I found two variations. It's hard to say which is best. I read the first. Victorious spirit, Michael is addressed. Flame the impotence of souls, burn out the egoism, ignite the compassion, that selflessness, the life stream of mankind, wells up as the source of spirit rebirth. Life stream of humanity or of mankind, that's the key formula. Going beyond hardened egoism. The other version is a bit different. Flame away the impotence of timid souls. burn up self-interest, kindle compassion, that selflessness, the life stream of humanity, reigns as the source of spirit rebirth. So I'm not very happy with having this difference. You can judge better. What is the better version? And this is a verse you find in the collected verse somewhere in Steiner's work. Maybe we should now mention also the last quotes come from Anthroposophical Leading Thoughts. That's the title of the work. And this is to be found in volume 26 of the collected works. And what I mentioned before, Steiner's lectures on the incarnation of Ahriman are drawn out of two or three volumes. And this is just a German cover using part of a painting of Steiner's showing the figure, the portrait of Ahriman, and here Lucifer. And here a model sculptured by Steiner showing Ahriman. And maybe I can close with a little true anecdote. But then Steiner was making this plastic picture, and the model of the Christ, which we have in the other room, Lucifer and Ahriman, he said when he did this, he had to make sure that Ahriman and Lucifer, one after the other, sat there as a model as long as he needed it. And he said, with Lucifer, it was not that difficult because he is a spirit who likes to show itself, himself. With Ahriman, it was difficult. And he had to summon a certain magical power to force him, the spirit who doesn't respect freedom, force him to be there till he was finished with a little sculpture. Result, there was maybe a little material defect in one of the great windows in the first Goetheanum, and there was suddenly a crack from top to bottom. It split. And Steiner says, that was Ahriman's revenge. So that's quite an impressive scene and can give us the necessary respect of this being who is now having this great chance, because in the historical events I described briefly, he and also Lucifer never got to what they actually strived for. And we can be sure right now, in the time of the incarnation of Ahriman, he will do every effort to finally get to his aims. And it is only up to us human beings, by understanding this part of the reality, that he won't be able to do this. And even in a further perspectives, Steiner thinks he hates the human thinking out of a mysterious background he doesn't explain. He does not know yet that in human thought and cognition, there will be the source of his own Erlösung. What is it?
Redemption.
Exactly. So that's an important perspective. Human thinking and cognition are necessary for his redemption. But I think it would be a little bit naive to think that's in the moment now. Now he's certainly trying to get as much out of his incarnation as possible. But when this is going to fail, and it must fail, through our spiritual battle efforts, then human thinking is the mirror for him to see his own spiritual origin. Cosmological, oriented human thought, with all that we can gather to understand from spiritual science. Thank you for your attention. It was long and hard, but it is fitting the subject, I think.